That's hilarious. That is one of my least favorite songs of all time. And it was a perfect song for today. I'm so glad that you sang that because it's the first time I think I've ever sang it. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly, I know exactly what that song's about. Because I was always like, what is that song about? Trains. It's a perfect song. Can I have all the kids come up here for a few minutes? Everybody come on up here. We're going to do something. We're going to do something for Chris Lewis today. He's going to be excited about this. Come on up on stage. I want you guys to sit down right where Catherine and Dylan are, right here. You guys have a seat and look this way. Sit down, facing me over here. We're going to talk about the Advent wreath for a minute. Come on over and have a seat for just a moment. We're going to even pretend like the old people aren't there for a few minutes, and then we're going to put them on the spot. All right. So we've been lighting this every week. Do you know that? Maybe you haven't even recognized it. We haven't made a big deal about it. Get it done. So there are four Sundays in Advent. How many?
Four.
Four Sundays. This is the third Sunday. So we've lit one candle every week. So the first week we lit a candle, a purple candle. Let's light that one right there. And the idea behind that candle is the idea of hope. You guys know what hope is? Hope's not here today, but you know, hope in general. Hope is about waiting for something, right? Like, I hope I get something great for Christmas, right? That's hope, right? Then we talk about, we light another candle, talk about love, right? Your parents love you, you love your friends, we love our church.
You love your babies.
You love your babies that maybe are on their way. Give it up.
The spirit of Christmas.
The spirit of Christmas. Today is our third Sunday of Advent. And we're not very good at this one. So you guys are good. Those guys aren't very good at this. So we're going to work on helping them today, okay? So the third Sunday of Advent is about, I know some of you guys are old enough to read. Can you see those little signs over there on the green things hanging by there with the red sparkle? What does it say, Jordan?
Joy.
Today's about joy. Now here's the deal. They are joyful. Look at them. Don't they just look like they're just full of abundance of joy, right? Like, you know what joy is, right? Joy is about this feeling like down. You know one of the most joyful people I know? Grant.
Happy.
That dude is happy all the time and just excited. It's just like his grandpa just bubbling over all the time. Like, this is so joyful. So here's what we're gonna do something crazy today. Alright, let's go ahead and stand up. How many of you have seen the movie Trolls? We're gonna go all trolls on the people today, okay? So go ahead and go down. Let's go get off the stage for a minute. No, just a second, and we're going to just take over the whole auditorium and get around. All you old people, stand up, because you're going to have to be part of this. Stand up, stand up. I know you're ready to be joyful about the sermon. That gets you excited. Ben is going to play a song for us. And we're going to find the beat, and we're just going to start to kind of move. And we're going to dance in church. I saw Footloose. It's okay. We're just going to kind of dance. Go ahead, Ben, and give us, remember to unmute it. Now, I didn't want to get crazy with Metallica, but we're in a little Marley, so feel it. You feel the beat a little bit? Clementine, if they don't start doing it, I'm going to have you lead. Because it's like me trying to lead songs like Chris, like, one love, everybody. Come on, old people. All right, now go out there. Find the old people. What happened to the music? They're never going to dance without music. What is this?
This is how I dance.
All right, go find somebody and make them dance. Come on. Let's go, Kellen. Make the old people dance. Go make them dance. Go find some old people and just grab them and say, dance. Let's go. Let's go. You can dance with me. Kurt's going to need help. If you're really uncomfortable, just watch the lyrics. Find your mom and dad.
Are you dancing?
This is like 3 minutes of torture for some of you.
Get into character.
Yeah, man, you guys are like the most dramatic here. Let's go. Chris Cole's feeling it. Schreiber's feeling all right now. I wish I had a video of Val Harris this whole time. John Hutchinson's hoping the song's over. It's almost there, man. Look at those words, Maynard. This is good stuff. Me neither. I'm going to blow you away, Kathy. Marley bringing us together today. Where's Lee Dameron at? Sunday's for him.
So what's a Armada Gideon? Oh,
that's the Cajun. This is Carhoff's jam.
Yeah.
Look at the lyrics. Now the kids get to keep going and having fun. Miss Angie's in the back. The old people are going to stay in here and suck the life out of our auditorium that we've all created. Great job, everybody. Good job. Thanks, Kellen. I mean, you're hanging. Leave me hanging. Okay, you're still dancing, feeling? Miss Angie will take everybody out to youth worship out the door out there. We're going to continue to talk about joy, sort of. You just never know when you wake up on a Sunday morning, A, what time we're going to start, and B, what's going to happen. All week, I'm like Chris, man. Music is my thing. And all week I was thinking about, you know, the challenge of Easter time and Christmas time is it's kind of the same thing every year. And after your 40th or 50th or 60th Christmas, you just start going, didn't we just do this? Wasn't this just like a few months ago? And for some reason, of all the things during Advent season to come in my mind, I started thinking about Bob Marley. And I started thinking about this song. I know we were having fun, but hopefully you got a chance to check the lyrics out. At one point in this song, he says, as it was in the beginning, one love, so it shall be in the end, one heart, all right. Give thanks and praise to the Lord, and I will feel all right. Let's get together and feel all right. That's some deep stuff right there. That's some deep stuff. Everybody thinks about Bob Marley smoking weed, and I'm sure he smoked weed once in a while. He was a Christian. He was baptized in the Ethiopian Orthodox Church. Maybe you didn't know that. And later in his life, man, a lot of his music was, it was like this. And the thing I like about Bob Marley is that his music isn't, it's not just hippie, like, oh, it's going to be great someday. Like, he confronted the realities of the fact that it's not always great right now. Like, and so at one point he says, let's get together and fight this holy Armageddon. So when the man comes, there will be no doom. You see how that, it's an Advent song. We want it to be like it was in the beginning at the end, but in the meantime, let's get together and fight this holy Armageddon, all the evil that's in the world. He doesn't deny the fact that there's bad stuff going on in the world. And yet somehow in the third Sunday of Advent, we light a candle and we say, man, is it a joy to be alive? Isn't it great to be alive? And we talked about this the last couple weeks, but man, there's a lot of bad stuff going on in the world. How can you say that? Well, the beauty of these 4 weeks of preparation is it's kind of this cleansing time. We see constantly all the negativity in the world and all the things that there is to fight about. And we all participate in the fighting and the bickering and have our views about things and deal with the things in our family, which, you know, for all of us, is that's enough, right? On top of everything else that we have. And so we don't deny that those things are out there, but we have this dream we talked about a week or two ago. We have this vision of what it's supposed to be like. And as Christians, we can hold on to it with all of our hearts and say, I know it's going to work out. I know it's going to be okay. Even at the side of a grade side, you still can know. It hurts, and it doesn't feel right, and you're frustrated, maybe you're angry, but the bedrock of our faith is, but it's going to be okay. And so we sing with Bob Marley, right? We do ridiculous things on Sunday mornings and look at each other and say, going to be okay. It's kind of a salve for the wound a little bit sometimes. But in the meantime, And that's what we want to talk about for a few minutes this morning. In the meantime, we're getting ready. We're getting ready. And that's really what Christianity is about, right? What are we going to do in the meantime? I mean, we have our discussions about what it's going to be like and what heaven's going to be like and what, you know, how we get there and what it'll be like in the interim and all these kinds of things. But by and large, the entire world of Christianity believes that there's a heaven, believes that through the atoning sacrifice of Christ, we're going to get there. The question is, the million-dollar question is, what do we do until then? What do we do? Do we build bigger barns? Well, Jesus told a pretty poignant parable to say, hey, we're not building bigger barns. So what do we do? Well, first of all, what do we get ready for a lot of things. And so for a few minutes, like Brian said, I want to talk about preparation. What are some of the things that we prepare for? There's a lot of them. What do you prepare for? That's about as open-ended of a question as I get. Prepare for. Where's Aubrey? Cameron? You guys getting ready? You know, by the time you have four, I think it just happens. But especially the first one, the first two. But isn't it amazing? I mean, I've always thought this was one of the beautiful things about the way God created the world. It's not like you just go, let's have a baby, and tomorrow you have a baby, right? There's always this, that word pregnant, it means a lot more than just being pregnant, right? Pregnant is like this loaded idea that there's anticipation, there's something coming, and so you're waiting. You guys better hurry up and get ready, though, because we're running out of time. Prepare for having a baby. What else should you prepare for? Prepare for a wedding, right? Those are the two big ones probably in our lives. I mean, the idea of a wedding, you prepare, oh, we're engaged, when you get married, well, in 3.5 years, 9 months, 12 months, whatever it is, and you take time to get ready for a wedding. Anything else? Yeah, where's our kids at, our teens at? Guys, get ready for your tests. Those of you who have different criteria or tests at your jobs, that maybe you have to take, get ready for those. Other things? Lynn? What's that? Get ready for vacation. What do you rather do? Get ready for having a baby, get ready for having vacation, or get ready for having a test? Like, all preparation is not the same, right? Sometimes you just kind of begrudgingly the entire time go through the process of getting ready. And other times, it's exciting thinking about what's happening. You prepare every single day, don't you? When you wake up, some of you, probably it's a long process. For me, it's about 15 minutes, and I'm ready to go. After I kind of wake up. It's amazing. Clark and Cecilia wake up and they're ready. Clementine, how long does it take you? Kind of like 20 minutes to wake up. She's still waking up, so sometimes it's a little bit longer than that. It takes all of us different amounts of time. Anybody else? Prepare. How long? What else do you prepare for? It takes time to prepare a meal, right? I mean, if you really want to cook, and it's Christmas season, a lot of times this is a long preparation process of getting ready for a meal. We went to the store yesterday just to buy the stuff that we're going to use to cook our cookies and stuff. It's a couple-day process. Anybody else? What should you prepare for? Getting ready for tomorrow? Thanks, Bob Dylan. That was romantic and deep. Getting ready for tomorrow? Yeah, anything in the future, right? Where's our athletes? Ben, do you ever have to prepare for a game? Like, as a football official, it's hilarious. And Val, Ray, you guys know this. Guys get ready for a game way different ways. Like, sometimes, because, you know, we go out for the coin toss, sometimes these guys are, like, stone-eyed, and they don't even say it. They just grunt. Like, they're just so psyched up. It's hilarious. I'm with the linebackers, you know, so these guys are psychos. And they just, some of them are just completely out of their mind, and some of them are just completely together and sound like they could be walking across the street with their grandmother, but the other guys are beating their head against the wall, and It's just hilarious. But everybody kind of prepares in a different way for that. Soldiers, you know, we talk about preparing for battle. You don't just, hey, let's go invade somebody. There's preparation involved in that, too. Dave, did you have something? Prepare for, like, getting your picture taken? Yeah. When you're painting? Yeah, that's what I don't like about you guys. Because I always thought that artists, like, did their, but come to find out, there's actually some work behind it, right? You have to kind of prepare perspective and get kind of a rough sketch and everything. Chris? Yes, thank you. We're just going to keep rolling with that one. No details, just lots of you are smiling about that when you're like, kind of like this uncomfortable smile, like, yeah, I've been there. Know that. Sometimes you just need to just cleanse it all for different reasons. I've been working on a project, Ben. Go ahead and flip the slides up here. I've been preparing a project. It's for Mary Beth's Christmas present, so don't tell her it's a secret. Go ahead. Next one. I bought some oak planks. My dad knows, this is going to sound like small town defiance. My dad knows a guy who owns a mill, so he milled these oak planks. And so I bought these 10-foot oak planks to build a kitchen table. So that's been one of my like bucket list things. I want to build a big, heavy kitchen table. So this is the surface of the table. Now these are rough-hewn oak boards, so they've just been kind of rough. Go back to that previous one. Go back to one before that. So they're just laying on my basement floor. They've been down there for about a year, just kind of curing a little bit. So to get ready, Mary Beth was excited about that. Don't tell her about this. So she's been sitting down there, and I said, I want to get it done for Christmas. So the legs there are from Mary Beth's grandmother's house. They're from their stairwell. So I want to strip those all down, put the table together. So the next slide is the table all put together. This has been a couple weeks I've been working on this at late at night and stuff. Put the table together. Now, it hasn't been sanded or planed or anything like that. Just getting ready. Go to the next one now. So these are the legs. They got to be stripped off of all that varnish and junk and try to get them ready. I haven't even started that yet. Go to the next one. So look at all these tools I've been working on, okay? So then I have the base underneath of that. This is in the garage, so it's kind of a mess. There's all kinds of stuff there. The Craig jig is like the greatest thing ever invented. Go to the next one. I think this is about as far as I've gotten. So I had to cut off one of the legs and make them a little longer so they'd be tall enough. And then the next one, so that's about as far as I got so far. I got to get it all stripped together and stripped off and everything like that. But it's amazing how much time it takes to get something like this ready. Like the preparation is unbelievable. And I've learned that the more like woodworking and stuff I've done, if you don't take your time and do it right in the preparation stage, it's a disaster. Like nothing's more frustrating. Ask Bill Dameron when you get to the very, when you put the varnish coat on, like the last coat, and you screw it up. You're like, man, I just spent all that time of preparation and somewhere messed up along the way. Hey, Bill, I bought a planer this week, a hand planer. Anybody, you have a hand planer? Does anybody have a hand planer? Those are the most annoying things I've ever dealt with in my entire life. Like, they're just so, you got to get the blade just right. And what do you do with the planer? Thanks. What do you do with the planer? Right? Thank you. You got him started, John. He's going to be a long day. What do you do with the planer, Mike? So you got this blade that's about this big, and you're going all across it trying to get it to smooth out. This little bit at a time, that table is, I think, 8 feet long, 7 feet long. And it's about 3.5 feet wide. And I got my little stupid, this is the dumbest thing ever. And everybody's like, why aren't you using an industrial planer? Well, I could have. But just little bit at a little. And it's made me appreciate this whole thing we're talking about today. I couldn't help but think about this as I was getting ready for this morning. Is that just kind of, like a planer, more than any other tool I've ever used, is just kind of what life is like, man. Like you're going through life, and it is kind of plain, and just a little bit at a time, you're trying to just work out a kink here, and you got a high spot here, and it's rough here, and it's just slowly becoming your experience. And that's what today I wanted to talk to you about, is in the meantime of our preparation, of our waiting for Jesus to come back, our waiting for our life to kind of come to the end. In the New Testament, the concept was telos, goal, the end. Heaven, whatever you want to call it. We're waiting for that. And life will be pretty good for a little while, and we'll get excited, we'll get sidetracked, and then something will happen to remind us, oh yeah, man. And we sing all those songs. Won't it be wonderful there? And I just can't wait to get there. And the idea of heaven. And there's a little parable in Matthew chapter 25 that I wanted to share with you this morning. And it's one that I always thought was odd as a kid, probably because it talked about 10 virgins, which kind of lost track of you when you're in middle school. You're like, what does that have to do with anything? Chapter 25, Matthew, very beginning, Jesus tells a rather odd parable for our ears today. And I'm trying to remember the last time I read or studied this parable. It's been a long time. I hadn't thought about it in a long time. At that time, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. The foolish ones took their lamps, but did not take any oil with them. The wise, however, took oil in jars along with their lamps. The bridegroom was a long time in coming, and they all became drowsy and fell asleep. At midnight, the cry rang out, "Here comes the bridegroom! Come out and meet him!" Then all the virgins woke up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish ones said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil. Our lamps are going out." "No," they replied, "there may not be enough for both of us and you. Instead, go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves." But while they were on their way to buy oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins who were ready went with him to the banquet, their wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Later, the others came also and said, "Sir, sir, open the door for us." But he replied, "I tell you the truth, I don't know you. Therefore, keep watch, because you don't know the hour or the day." So this is, all in all, a pretty odd parable. If you were to act out a parable on stage and try to kind of translate it from the Bible to today, this is one that probably wouldn't necessarily translate very easily, because we have so many questions. What is this parable about? So first of all, let's try to investigate a little bit of what the background was. And I'm not an expert in Jewish weddings of the first century. I minored in that. Do a little bit of reading. It appears as though the 10 virgins is a wedding party, right? It was the bridal party. And what happened was, there was more of an arrangement in the first century between the families who were getting married. And so what would happen is, the groom would go to the bride's family and work out a dowry. They'd work out the situation of, you know, the terms of their marriage. And sometimes, especially if they lived in different towns, this would take a while. I mean, you all remember talking to your father-in-law the first time you wanted to talk about taking. Now imagine if this was the kind of conversation, not just "can I have her hand in marriage," but "oh, I'm going to take her away from your house because she still lives at home. And remember, she's probably 15 or 16 too. I'm going to take her away from your house. She's coming with me. We're going to move away, and she's going to live in my family, and they have their little house and all that." So, and that's going to happen that day. And there's probably maybe even a contract involved. All right, just go ahead. So as you can imagine, it would take a little bit of time. Now, on the other side, the bride is with her party, and they're all doing their hair and whatever they do to get ready for the wedding. They don't know when he's going to get there. They don't know. And what's going to happen, and this is the really weird stuff, they're going to come, and they're going to the groom is going to pick her up with her bridal party. They're going to go to their new house, which is, and I don't know if you've seen like the old first century houses, but they just kind of added on to the, you know, they had the family kind of owned a property, and then they would just add on sections to the house. Everybody kind of lived together, but they'd have their own little section. So what would happen is, they would take the bride and the groom to their house, and then the bridal party would stand outside of the house and celebrate and play music while they broke the house in and did whatever, and then they would just kind of go home after their music had died down. So that's kind of the situation that was going. So if you're thinking about getting married or know somebody, you may want to suggest that as a new policy. Obviously, it's a little different 2,000 years later, but that's kind of the situation. And so Jesus tells a story. Now, for him, he didn't have to explain it. That was the life that they knew. For us, it's kind of like, yeah. With that as an understanding, okay, so all of the bridal party is waiting with the bride. He still hasn't come. You know, her dad's being difficult in the negotiations or whatever it is, but it's taken a while. Five of the bridesmaids were wise. They were here. They knew this could take a while. So they brought oil, and they said, "We're here for the long haul." And somewhere along the line, they said, "Hey, you five that don't have oil, you better go get ready, because he's coming." You know, they see the torches in the horizon or whatever it is. So they go off. The groom comes while they're gone. And the moral of the story there at the end is to keep watch, because you don't know the day or the hour. Now, there's a couple of different ways you could kind of read this parable. In some ways, we can read it really individualistically, like, hey, we're out there getting oil on our own in our Christian faith, and we're supposed to get ready on our own, and every man for himself kind of thing, right? Because at the end, they try to get oil from the others, and they said, no, you got to get it on your own. And there's a little bit of that. That we are accountable to God, each one of us individually. I mean, Kurt Morrow is responsible for Kurt Morrow, Mike Schreiber for Mike Schreiber, and Kathy Dameron for all of those grandkids and you. No pressure. Right? We're all responsible for ourselves, and that's really what this story's about in some regards. I don't think the Bible ever really tells a story that it's all about the individual, but there's certainly one where it says, yeah, you've got to kind of be ready. Again, it goes back to that Bob Marley song. What are we doing in the meantime? What are we doing to get ready? Now, what is the oil? That's, I think, the problem we have to wrestle with. I want to go back to the Psalms, since we've been kind of reading through the Psalms. Listen to the words of Psalm 27. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When evil men advance against me to devour my flesh, when my enemies and my foes attack me, they will stumble and fall. Though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. Though war may break out against me, even then I will be confident. One thing I ask of the Lord, this is what I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple. From the day of trouble he will keep me safe in his dwelling. He will hide me in the shelter of his tabernacle and set me high upon a rock. Then my head will be exalted above my enemies who surround me. At his tabernacle will I sacrifice with shouts of joy. I will sing and make music to the Lord. Hear my voice when I call, O Lord. Be merciful to me and answer me. My heart says to you, seek his face. Your face, Lord, I will seek. Do not hide your face from me. Do not turn your servant away in anger. You have been my helper. Do not reject me or forsake me, O God, my Savior. Though my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will receive me. Teach me your way, O Lord. Lead me to a straight path because of my oppressors. Do not turn me over to the desire of my foe for false witness. Rise up against me, breathing out of violence. I am confident of this. After he goes through that whole psalm, this is where he lands. I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord and be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord. The one thing the psalm asks us is that he may dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Sounds a little bit like the end of the psalm, the 23rd psalm. And it's interesting as we talk about this waiting in the meantime, waiting for the Lord, waiting for whatever it is, kind of fill the blank in. What are we supposed to do? Where's the checklist? Right? That's what I want. Just give me a checklist, Jesus. These are the things to get done. My wife does that for me sometimes. I'm going to be gone for a couple hours. Here's the things you need to get done. Right? And that's kind of reassuring. All right, I can get this done. I can get this done. I can get this. And then I'm done. And it's interesting, Jesus never gives everybody a checklist. He didn't say, all right, 12 disciples, I'm about to be gone. Just do these 10 things and we're good. Instead, it's more of this nebulous idea of everything that we do in the meantime is supposed to be for him. Everything that we do. And so I think as we come to the end of the year, it's always a helpful time to begin to ask ourselves some of those questions that are pressing, like Chris was talking about this morning. It's just a crazy time of year, and sometimes we just have to be still and to ask ourselves some questions. And just like each of the 10 virgins was responsible to themselves, you are responsible for yourself, and you have to ask yourself these questions. I can't answer them for you. And so these questions come like this. What are you living your life for? Like really, what sets the agenda of your life? What dominates your time and attention day in and day out, week in and week out? What has a hold on your deepest convictions? Like, what really gets you fired up? What do you really get passionate about? Besides Bob Marley songs, I could see that really is your thing today, right? But in addition to that, what really gets you fired up? What in your life looks most like Jesus' life? I mean, how often do we even ask that question? What about my life as I go out tomorrow, Monday morning? What about me looks like Jesus? Because after all, isn't that what we're really called to do and to be? How are you sharing the love of Christ with other people? You know, I had this vision kind of in my mind this week of Hansel and Gretel. Aren't they the ones that kind of left breadcrumbs as they kind of walked? I mean, isn't that what we're supposed to do as Christians? Is just kind of leave breadcrumbs everywhere we go of evidence of Jesus Christ as Lord? I mean, that's really all we're supposed to do. Just live your life so that so that when you walk in and out of a room, people go, that was different. That was a breath of fresh air, right? That was, there's something about that person. And I want to kind of step back a little bit, and I really feel like the next couple of weeks are kind of going to build upon each other for some things that we're hoping to do in 2017, because I think the same conversation holds true for our church. I think that's what a church really is. A church is kind of a holding tank for us while we're waiting. So that it's not just each one of us individually on our own out there trying to figure it out as we go, trying to make a splash on our own. Because let's face it, it's very difficult for each individual one of us to make a splash, to make a difference. Instead, we're always looking for partners, we're always looking for teams, we're always looking for groups. And God looks at us and says, well, that's what I give you the church for. That's why the church is so important. That's why the local church, like all of us who are here today, that's why it's important that we live together. Because as we're waiting, joyfully waiting, we're trying to do things on behalf of God. And so those same questions that we just asked, what's dominating our life, not just individually, but collectively as a church, what's dominating our church's life? What dominates our time and attention? What fills our calendar throughout the year? What has the hold, the deepest hold on the convictions of us collectively as a church? What in our life, in this community, makes us resemble Jesus Christ? How do people know that this is a place where people who worship Jesus come? Those are all questions that we've got to begin to ask of ourselves. And then I think the million-dollar question for Christians and for being a disciple is, how do I take those convictions and then transform them into action? Right? Isn't that really what we spend most of our lives trying to figure out? I know what I believe. All the way back to when we were baptized, I believe Jesus the Father is the Son of God, and He died for my sins. Okay, now how do you transform that into doing something to make a difference? And I don't have the answer to that. And I don't know that you have the answer to that, but I think collectively we can begin to answer that question. But I want to encourage you to be thinking about these things as we move on in the next couple of weeks. While we're waiting. That's one of my new favorite phrases, while we're waiting, because it's always so appropriate for Christians. While we're waiting, what are we doing? What are we doing? I know if you're like me, you'll go through one of these weeks during Christmas and you'll get to the end of the week and you'll go, what was that? I did this and this and this, but what did you really do? What did you really spend time on? And with our kids, we're asking that question. What are we doing with our kids? How are we instilling in them the values of in faith of Jesus Christ? At the end, I want to leave you with the words, the end of that Dylan, the Marley song. Give thanks and praise to the Lord and I'll feel all right. Let's get together and feel all right. It's not all about feeling all right, but it is about joy. It's about a joyful coming together, knowing that this is just an in-between time. So as we finish out this morning, I would invite you to stand with us and we sing this final song about